IsraelScene.com. You're listening to IsraelScene.com. I'm Steve.
And this is Yoram. You know, Steve, over the years since we began this series, we've used, at the closing, a version of Hatikva that was created by Bruce Berger, who also goes by the name Rebbe Sol. And we've never talked with him because he was always living in America. And our self-made rule was that we only talk to people who live here in Israel. And now Rebbe Sol has come to live in Israel, so we've sat down and talked with him. And we'll begin the program the way we usually end it, but this time we'll play the entire Hatikva as created by Rebbe Sol. And we'll listen to some of his other wonderful music.
Time, you know, I was listening to a lot of Jewish stuff. You know, you kind of get the bug, and you keep listening more and more and more to different things. And there were so many songs. And one thing that's, you know, the Israeli national anthem. How can one even avoid it if you want to try? You know, and it's a great piece of music. You know, in addition to being very meaningful in a lot of other ways. And I always thought that it would be nice to do. I mean, for the whole Fringe of Blue album, which is what we're dealing with at this point, the whole concept behind it was taking traditional Jewish stuff and, you know, playing them instrumentally in my own way. And so Hatikva, you know, just sort of fell right in there because it's a great melody. It's very meaningful as well. Not even, you know, in a Jewish way and also in an Israeli way. And so I thought, well, I really want to take a crack at this, you know. I want to really make it sing, you know. So I took it to kind of like a different place, you know. I rocked it pretty hard, and that was a song for a while, like on our various tours in the band Rebbe Soul. You know, we used to close the night with that because it was just a really powerful thing to end with.
Did this have anything to do with Jimi Hendrix and the Star Spangled Banner by some wild chance?
That's funny. A lot of people bring that up. He certainly did something with the Star Spangled Banner. But it was more of a protest thing. At least I think it was. I don't know. Whereas mine, it's not like that. It's just me just playing the song the way I would play it, you know. And maybe he was doing that too. I really don't know. I mean, I never met him or anything like that. I was like a wee toddler, you know, when he was doing that stuff. I don't know if it necessarily influenced me or not. I think, you know, a lot of people get influenced by things without even realizing it too, you know. You can listen to all kinds of different things and they, you know, kind of work on your subconscious, and without even realizing it, you can be influenced by those things. So I certainly had heard that, that's for sure. I didn't really, you know, consciously make an effort to do that necessarily, but Hendrix definitely influenced my guitar playing a lot.
You said before that you then began listening to a lot of Hebrew music. What were you playing? What was your music like before that?
Before I started my whole Rebbe Soul project, I was a freelance guitar player in Los Angeles, doing a lot of sessions, recording sessions, playing, you know, like 15 bands at the same time, like a lot of guitar players are in L.A. Or a lot of musicians are in general. And, you know, when you do that, especially doing a lot of recording sessions, you become a chameleon of sorts. And I was looking for my own sound. I wanted to sound like me. When I would go to sessions, one of the reasons I did a lot of sessions, I think, is I could, you know, play in a lot of different styles pretty easily. I could just kind of fall into something and sound like, you know, if someone wanted me to sound like, I don't know, Clapton here, I would do that, or sound like this over there, this person, or this style. But I really wanted my own voice, and I found it in my roots. And that's how come I started really delving into a lot of Jewish music, and it became like a real obsession, and I'd have to say a healthy obsession, I think. And it became a parallel journey for me. It was a musical journey and a spiritual journey at the same time.
Now, one of the reasons that we're interviewing you and that we haven't interviewed you in the past is that you now live in Israel, which sort of is a somewhat of a requirement or a preference on our part. What is that, this moving to Israel?
Well, let's see. I guess several years ago I came to Israel really as a vacation, to be a tourist. And like a lot of people that come to Israel, from what I understand, you know, you plan to stay here for, say, 3 weeks, and you stay for like 3 months. And that's exactly what happened to me. I ended up postponing my return on like El Al or whatever it was at the time. I mean, literally probably three times easily. And I just fell in love with the place. It was great. But I was still a tourist, and I toyed with the idea of moving here, but I hadn't quite made that decision. But there was a turning point where I did make that decision. And I remember it very vividly. Shortly after that, I returned. I was here for Pesach, and that was really nice. Still a tourist. I had a lot of very interesting experiences. I was with a Yemenite family, and I heard, you know, Chad Gadya and all these other songs, and I didn't recognize a single melody the whole time. And it was fascinating to me. One of the things about Israel is the blending of cultures, or the coexistence, perhaps, of different cultures because of the diaspora and everything else, which I just find fascinating. But I was still a tourist, and I came back a couple more times. But then I was asked to come here to produce an album for a band from Israel called Revele Sheva. And they're actually a number of them are American immigrants here, but they lived here for many years already. And they wanted me to come and produce their album. So the band itself was a blend of Israelis and American Israelis, pretty much. So that was it was a really fun time. And what was particularly significant about it was the fact that I came here. I took an apartment for about a month and a half to do the album, and I was in Yerushalayim. We did most of the recording in Givat Shaul, which is part of, you know, Yerushalayim. And every day I would get up and I would get on a bus or maybe a taxi and go to the studio. I would work till around 6 o'clock, and I would come back, and then I would go out at night. And I realized, you know what? I'm not a tourist anymore. This is the way I would function or behave if I were a citizen of this country. And I actually kind of like it. It's really fun. This is really great. I could definitely do this. And that was the moment that I made the decision to make Aliyah. Now, it turns out I had a couple of albums I had to complete in the United States before I came here. So it took me like another, three or four years before I could do it. But that's when I made that decision.
I thought maybe one that I really appreciate is Avinu Malkeinu. And maybe you could tell us a little about it before we hear it.
Yeah, Avinu Malkeinu was actually the first Rebbe Soul song that I even recorded before there was even a Rebbe Soul concept. What happened was as I mentioned earlier, I was a studio musician in Los Angeles, and I decided I wanted to put together my own studio. I was doing a lot of work in other studios playing, and I was also getting called to produce things and stuff like that, and I thought, well, it's about time I had my own setup. And in those days, like in L.A., around that time, people were just beginning to put together their home studios. That was kind of the dawn of that age, so to speak, you know. And so I'd gotten a bunch of things, set stuff up, and I thought, well, you know, I want to just try recording something on my own just to see how everything goes. It's not necessarily related to work or a job, so I can afford, you know, to screw up a little bit, you know. So I was at a High Holiday Services on, I think it was on Yom Kippur, and so I was outside walking around with some friends of mine, and, you know, during a break or something like that, and one of them was just, he was just kind of singing, and it was really beautiful, it just sounded so nice, you know, and I thought, wow, that's a melody, I must know that in my sleep, I've heard it a million times, why don't I just record that, and I'll do it instrumentally, I'll just play it on guitar, it'll be so nice, you know, and, so that's what happened. So that was my my maiden voyage with my studio, and then I actually put it away. I didn't do anything with it for a long time, and then when I decided to do my whole Rebbe Soul concept, that was at a Shabbat dinner with some Chabad people, and it was the kind of thing they do in L.A. Where they invite you know, like 30 or 50 or whatever, like single people in L.A. To come to a Shabbat dinner, and there's sort of a theme, and this particular theme was everyone was from the entertainment business, so we have something to talk about. So I was a musician, and there were, you know, actors and managers and, you know, other musicians and stuff. So anyway, I remember going to that, and it was then that I started hearing a lot of melodies, and the Frumi guys were pounding the table and pounding out these Hasidic melodies, and I thought, man, this is, you know, if I've been looking for my sound, I think I just found it tonight. This is such a great thing. And I started learning the scale, which is called Fragish. In Arabic, it's Hijaz, and, you know, and I really got into it. It was great. And then I pulled out my old recording of Avinu Malkeinu, and that became really the beginnings of the very first Rebbe Soul album.
Well, I've always thought that the song itself, when I've heard it, when I've sung it in the synagogue, and then when you played it, it became very clear that this is really the blues. And I'm wondering if let's listen to it now. Thank you. I said before, I really feel like this is the blues that you've done to it. And I'm wondering if you have any blues influences, specific musicians, specific pieces of work that helped steer you to create this Avinu Malkeinu.
That's interesting that you observe that. I would say that the style of music that I probably play best, which most people don't even realize because I never play it anymore, is the blues. Guitar players, at least like from my era, who grew up, say, like 60s, 70s, into the 80s, guitar players in America listened to mostly rock players from the 60s who were influenced like really by the blues more than anything else, whether they were American or British, you know, whether they were, you know, the Duane Allmans or whether they were the Eric Claptons. And so we listened to them. And then, you know, the interested student, if I may use that phrase, would go farther back and listen to the guys that they listened to, which I did. And so, I've listened to so many of them. I think one of the best was probably Albert King. There were three Kings. There was Freddie King, Albert King, B.B. King. B.B. King was probably the most famous, and I think was really, really great. And I just loved his soul. And he had a great style. He had this like real hummingbird kind of vibrato, which I probably, you know, now that I think about it, maybe that's where my vibrato comes from. And he actually got it from somebody else. He got it from a non-blues player named Django Reinhardt, who was probably B.B. King's biggest influence. And there's so many other great blues players. Like Clapton was influenced a lot by Robert Johnson, who had a really short life and a short career. And he listened to a lot of other people too. There are a lot of grooves that we play that come from Bo Diddley, like the hand jive thing. So there's a whole wealth of kind of guitar culture, I'd say, in American blues.
Do you think that there's a relationship between blues and Jewish music, Hebrew music, synagogue music?
Let's see. That's a good question. I never thought about it that much. Well, I think that on a certain level, and I hope I'm not copping out on answering your question by saying this, but on a certain level, when you play like from your soul, when you really play from the soul level, you're really making music. And the great blues players, I mean, that's basically what they had. They played from their soul. That was it. Their scales weren't complicated. They didn't have all kinds of, you know, complex rhythms and stuff like that. But it was just stuff that came right from their soul. And to me, Jewish music, I'd have to say, like, probably any kind of music, really, when it's at its best, or when me as a player, when I'm playing at my best, it's when I sort of forget about everything and I just play, and I just play from my soul. So on that level, I would say absolutely.
Let's move on to your next album, which I think is your most recent. And could you tell us the name and select a tune? And so let's move on to the latest album, which is called?
That's called Change the World with a Sound.
That sounds like a good idea, too, even without the music. What would you like us to hear from that? What do you think would be... the tipo C would be typical, would be expressive of where you were at when you were doing that album?
Well, this was a really fun album for me to do. It's probably the first album that I really involved the band a lot, because we were all in the same place at the same time. So a lot of band members came in and played a lot of the parts on the album, whereas on the other ones, I pretty much played most of the stuff myself, with a few exceptions. So this was really, really fun for me, because it had the interaction with all the other musicians, which, you know, really creates more magic, you know. There are a lot of interesting songs on here. One of my favorites, my personal favorites, is a song called Kaddish.
What number is that?
It's track number 3 on the album. And Kaddish was something that took me about, a couple of years to actually do, because I carried around a portable recorder, and I did sampling literally all over the world. I was in Israel, I was in the United States, I was in Europe, and I was just sampling all kinds of different things in addition to regular, you know, nature sounds and things like that. I was sampling, you know, people, ethnic groups doing their thing. I was in the Sinai, and I sampled the Bedouins, you know, chanting and stuff like that. And where Kaddish came about is I sampled a lot of chanting, like Jewish chanting and praying, like tefillah. And one prayer that comes up like all the time is Kaddish, because you say it several times a day, even if someone doesn't die, you know. And what struck me about it was, depending on which group I recorded, they all sounded sort of similar because it's the same prayer, but they all sounded really, really different. Like the Persians sounded different than the Yemenites, who sounded different than the Ashkenazim, and so on. And the very first Kaddish prayer that you'll hear on the track, the one that that opens up, is from the Kotel, and that was David. Yeah, that's right, the Western Wall. Excuse me, and that was David Hertzberg, who used to go down there a lot of time and had kind of a whole following of people that used to gather around him. And I was standing right next to him, and I just thought, man, this guy sounds great. I gotta get this. And sadly enough, he died like a week before this album came out, so he never really heard the album. An amazing person. And you'll hear a lot of other things. You'll hear Ethiopians in there and stuff like that.
Amen.
Okay, so now we've heard Kaddish. Is there something else on that album that you think really is worthwhile and special?
So there's a song called Shalom, which is... Shalom is... that's an original song. Actually, Kaddish is original, too. It's a kind of a... it's a combination, as you just heard, of many different Kaddish prayers that were recorded all over. And then we came in and we just sort of, we played like music as kind of an underbed for it. Shalom was a song that that I wrote before we played. There was a club in Hollywood called Billboard Live, and we were scheduled to go on. And I remember we got together to rehearse the night before, and we needed one more song. And I think some of the best stuff just sort of happens automatically like this, you know? And so I just sort of came up with it, and I kind of sang the parts to everybody, and then, of course, they changed it according to their own preference and style. And we played it for the first time that night, and we even videotaped it, and I still think it's one of the coolest songs we ever did. It's just called Shalom, and it has, you know, the words for peace in a few different languages, mainly languages of religions. So you'll hear Shalom, you'll hear Salam, which also means peace, and that's in Arabic. And you'll hear a term in Japanese called Kozenrufu, which some Buddhists chant that, and our lead singer in the band is a Buddhist, and she chants that. And you'll hear something in Hindi. And anyway, so that's Shalom.
One of the other interesting things on this album, which was sort of a pleasant surprise to put it mildly, is that my rabbi Zalman Schachter appears reading or speaking a piece by Rabbi Nachman of Breslov about melody and so on. How did that show up?
Yeah, that's I was in touch with Rabbi Zalman Schachter for a long time, on and off. When my Fringe of Blue album came out, he somehow, I don't know how he did it. He tracked me down somehow, and I'd never really heard of him. I didn't know who a lot of these guys are, to tell you the truth. I wasn't really, you know, so studious in my religious studies, certainly at the time, you know. And so this was all very, very new to me. And so I remember I got a phone call, and it was him. And he started saying, you know, I like Avinu Malkeinu. It's very nice. I think you should do some more stuff with your acoustic guitar. Maybe you have some cellos. And it was really funny. I was hearing this rabbi talk.
Trying to produce.
Right. And later I found out, I went to visit him a few times, and he is a really musical guy. He knows his classical music. He told me amazing stories, like musical stories, which I've recorded. And by the way, I may even actually do an album of those stories, because they're priceless. They're absolutely priceless. He really knew his stuff. He knows his orchestral stuff really well. I mean, being from Vienna, I guess maybe in that era, maybe it's an automatic thing. And I think Shlomo Carlebach was there at the time, and Theodore Brickell. They were all like childhood chums from Vienna or something like that. I remember I went to see Zalman Schachter, and Theodore Brickell was there recently. But they grew up together. So in any case, so he started getting into all this stuff. And I remember one time I was talking to him, and he volunteered this story. It's actually by Yisrael Peretz, famous Yiddish, well, maybe not so famous, I don't know. But anyway, by Peretz. and he had this... the story he wanted to give me, called Reincarnation of a Melody. And I don't know if he had anything in particular in mind for it necessarily, but he just thought that this would be something that I should have. So I went and I recorded it at his house. And I recorded a whole bunch of other Hasidic stories, which were really great. And I used it as a way to introduce another version of Avinu Malkeinu, or on the albums they're usually just called Avinu, because... generally for Gentile audiences or DJs, it's asking an awful lot, I think, for them to be able to pronounce all that stuff, so I just shortened it to Avinu and left it at that. It made it a little bit easier for them to deal with. But I did a different version of Avinu on every single Rebbe Soul album for the basic reason that a good piece of music, or a good prayer even, or something that's done from the soul, can be done many, many different ways, and it still sounds good. Which is why, you know, a great song like, I don't know, Paul McCartney's Yesterday or whatever could be recorded by so many different people. And it sounds great because it stands on its own.
I just wanted to comment that Avinu means our father, and it comes from the prayer Avinu Malkeinu, our father, our king, which is close, if not complementary, to a well-known Christian prayer that also speaks in that same language. Let's go to the future. You're working on a new album. What's that like, and do you have anything that we can listen to?
Yeah, right now I'm working on an album of Shlomo Carlebach material. And Shlomo Carlebach was an amazing rabbi, and both, since we were talking about Zalman Schachter, they both got their smicha, ordination, is that how you say? Ordination together at the same time, and they were these young, frisky guys that went out and did this outreach thing, and they kind of, you know, went in their separate directions, but they always, I think, stayed good friends and stayed in touch. And Shlomo Carlebach died, I think, like maybe 12 years ago or something like that. But in that period of time, he managed to write literally, and I don't exaggerate, thousands of songs, of Jewish songs based on, you know, Jewish prayers. Many of them are so popular and so common that people think that they're folk melodies, but he actually wrote them. You know, one of the most famous is Am Yisrael Chai, I think, which people sing all the time. And these days, I would venture to say, if you go to almost any synagogue anywhere, whether it's Reform, Conservative, Orthodox, Reconstructionist, whatever it is, if you stay there long enough, you're going to hear Shlomo Carlebach melody. And they're so versatile. The melodies are so versatile that they that a lot of times people will take the melody of one prayer and use it as the melody for another prayer, and they fit in like flawlessly most of the time. It's uncanny. It really is. And so I thought, you know, it'd be interesting to, in a really worthwhile project, to do an album of, you know, say 10 or so of his songs, because they're great. And I'd like to kind of, you know, take a crack at it myself the way that I do things, in the same way that I did, say, Hatikva or Avinu or in these other things, mostly instrumentally. And try to, you know, kind of pay a homage to this great, you know, scholar, and singer-songwriter.
So what happened to the third?
Well, Steve, it got to be such a long program that we decided that that would be something to look forward to. You and I will look forward to it. Bruce looks forward to doing the interview and presenting his music. And our listeners can look forward to another wonderful time spent with Bruce Berger, Rebbe Soul, and his music.